Welcome to the Entra Podcast. This is your host, Michael Mara. I'm the CEO of Entra, a new professional network that we built to help you connect with new people and learn from industry experts. On this show, we interview the top CEOs, founders, investors, and creators from all over the world to have meaningful conversations about entrepreneurship and life. I hope you enjoy the show. On this episode, I interview Simon Squibb with my co-host, David Meltzer. Simon is an angel investor, entrepreneur, founder and CEO of HelpBank.com. He's an amazing person. He's an advisor, mentor, investor in my company, Entra. I've gotten to know him very well over the last couple of years. He went from being homeless to selling his company to PwC, starting companies in the UK, Hong Kong, all over the world. He's one of the biggest influencers in the business world today, helping people every day for free with their businesses, getting funding, and living their dreams. I hope you enjoy this episode.
For those of you who don't know Dave and Simon, they're both extremely successful entrepreneurs. They've been doing it for a long time. They both also create a ton of content all the time. It's kind of insane how they've been able to do it. And I've always admired how accessible they are as well. That's one of like the big things that I've come to learn from both of them. And I would love to, just start. I think we can start with Simon. I know you have been putting out a ton of content. You've been kind of getting famous for these street interviews. So I think the first topic can be around content. I think it's a huge part of, you know, not just like business nowadays, but I think any entrepreneur should consider figuring out a way to create content or a marketing strategy around it. So I'm curious what your, advice would be around people who are thinking about creating content, how they should approach it, anything that you've learned doing content every single day for the last several years. I know Dave is too, so we'll get to him in a second, but if there's anything that you can share around that, I think it'd be a great place to start, Simon.
Sure. Well, first thing I'll say is only take advice from people whose life you want. So if you want to be in the street every day with a microphone, rain or shine, talking to people, then listen to me. if you don't, maybe listen to David. I guess in my journey in making content, I started really being serious about making content 4 years ago. And part of the process for me was taking it seriously. I think sometimes with content, it could become a part-time thing, or it's just a hobby, or it's something you do when you've got a minute. I think it was 2 years ago that I hired a whole crew. And so I actually have 11 people that help me do the content. And I know it looks like it's all me with a phone or something, but it's 11 people that help me make it all. And I think that's a crucial piece of maybe appreciating how much work it is, not just for the content focus, the creator, let's say, but the actual making of it. I think taking it seriously is quite an important bit of advice. You know, I think the other thing that I've learned along the way is keep experimenting. So I started out 4 years ago just kind of going on TikTok and like giving advice. I mean, it's really boring, I think, actually, when I look back at some of that content now. It's just me talking. And I was always surprised to have any views, to be honest, because I was just going live when my baby was sleeping and just sharing what I thought about things. And over time, I got to understand the ecosystem. I got to understand, let's call it my competition. I got to understand me and what I like to do. And I think that's evolved into what I do now, which interestingly enough, my content's main focus, and this might be, you know, a thing to take away, is the content is not about me. I've got a very clear audience in mind. And I think this is another tip. It's like, who are you trying to talk to? And I'm trying to talk to people who are not doing what they love and help them do what they love. And so I have a very clear idea of those people in my head, what they look like, how they talk, their excuses. And ironically, those people in my head I was originally talking to, I'm now interviewing in the street. So I target people that I think, you know, look a bit downtrodden. But when you talk to them about their dreams, they come alive. And so I think that knowing your audience, understanding who you're trying to talk to, I think not making it a hobby and making it maybe something, at the beginning you can make it a hobby, but I think over time, if you want to be a real player in the content business, you have to take it seriously. And I think understanding why you're doing it, you know, the Simon Sinek thing, like why do I go out in the street every day and ask people what their dream is? Why do I do it? You know, and that's an internal self-motivation you need, but it's also an external validation as to, you know, why people are even going to care about what you're saying. I'll stop there because I'm really interested to hear what David's got to say.
Ditto. No, just amazing advice. It's so amazing how similar people's strategies are when it comes to building a community. And I think that's really the outcome, regardless of the intent. And for me, my intent was to help people make a lot of money, help people help a lot of people with that money, and have a lot of fun with that money. And the reason is I've never met anyone who makes a lot of money, helps a lot of people, and has a lot of fun in the activities that they do each day that isn't full of joy, happiness, peace, gratitude, all the great things that inspire us and others. So for me, I agree. I know why I do it, but I also know my essence. You know, one of the things that people overlook is their own skills, their own knowledge of who and what, and their own desires. And obviously my desire to empower others in this mission is really important. And the reason is that if you evolve and learn about your own essence, not only will be motivating and get you up when it's raining outside in London to go out on the streets and ask people what their dream is, but it will be inspiring. It'll keep you in spirit. It'll clear the interference between you and this abundant, infinite, unified system of energy, thought, omniscience that exists for all of us and will protect and promote you along that journey. I think another thing Simon said that is overlooked is the investment that it takes. There's four investments that are necessary in order to facilitate building a community of people that want to help each other, know people that can help each other. And when I say that, it is own essence of aggregating, compounding, and accelerating that community. People who help each other, know people that can help each other in a community, they do two things for life that will build your brand and your community further. One, they buy from you, whether it's your ideas, philosophies, theories, products, services, solutions, or personal brand. But even more importantly than buying from you for life, they sell for you for life. So now you have the exponentiality of people selling for you, saying, man, I love that Simon, check him out. And you know, that's truly the exponentiality of social silos that exist today. And I notice I call it and define it as a social silo is because people try to understand or know how the size, scope, and scale of the possibility, the total addressable market is. It's unfathomable. 7.6 billion people is unfathomable. And people who make it a hobby think that they want to be 7.6 billion people loving them. Sorry, that'll never happen. 10% of the people will love you, 10% will hate you, and the other 80% will never know you. And so if you look at what social silo that you want, and then feed that silo with what your mission is, utilizing your essence with these four strategies. One, make an investment in capturing your essence. So if you're on the streets interviewing people, make sure you invest in capturing that correctly. For me, I am blessed in my normal business life to have these extraordinary experiences, sidelines and locker rooms and all types of stages. I just capture it. And I have and invest a lot of money in capturing that. I started with 100 vlogs six and a half years ago. So I had a crew of people traveling around to create vlogs, 100 of them. Two, invest in modification. Every platform is not the same. The silo that you're looking for is not the same, and it doesn't access the information the same. So make sure you're investing in the modification of your assets. Three, invest in the amplification, not only money, but time. You know, one thing that Simon and I do is we enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of our potential every single day. I don't miss a day. And I enjoy that.
Doesn't miss a day unless the...
That was perfect timing
for I never miss a day.
Yeah.
The technology lets us down.
Yeah, I'm not sure. His video was lagging behind a little bit. I've seen and hear you perfectly clear. So we'll hopefully he can pop back in after he refreshes. I'll shoot him a text here.
I've only written down two of them. I need to know the other two.
There we go. And invest in the internet that works.
Number three, internet that works.
Yeah, so invest in capture, modification, and...
Oh, drop the game. Are we back?
Yeah. I wonder if I can finish this off.
I don't know why it's happening to me. So amplification, and then the last one, and I think this comes from more traditional marketing background, I create a perpetual strategy of my content. So what I do is utilize, hey, I have a full-time employee, guys. Most people don't have this. I have a full-time employee 7 days a week. His job is to go out there and ask people, hey, what do you do? What do you like? What don't you like? Would help you if I introduce you to David Meltzer? People either say, I love that guy, yes, or I hate that guy, no, or never, the majority, never heard of that guy. Well, I have a...
Oh, no.
I like that idea a lot, though. Anybody on here want a job going out and asking, do you want to meet someone?
That's a great job.
There you go. Perpetual strategy that allows anyone in the world to sell for me by showing them who David Meltzer is and letting my essence resonate with them. So capture, modify, amplify, and perpetuate. I'm going to hand it back to you before I drop again.
No, I love that. I mean, I think it sums up everything so well. And I know, I mean, I haven't interacted, Simon, with your team in person. I've known Dave's team for, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 years now. And they're monsters. They're on top of everything. And I know he has usually your main video guy is Justin, right, David? And then you always have a couple others there as well to support. And then he's like the main camera guy. They have other people on their phones.
Justin doesn't even hold a camera anymore. He runs outsourced about 300 different people on all the others. So we have different people filming. But yes, he was my D-Rock. And ironically, D-Rock's now with Gary, and Justin's been elevated to the head of my media.
Yeah, he's a monster. Yeah, and I know there's so many other people behind the scenes, but every time Dave rolls up, he's got like at least 4 or 5, usually up to 10 people with him at a time. And Simon, yeah, it's funny. You probably have like a whole probably mob rolling with you in the streets of London. So yeah, it's
best way to have new friends and pay them to join you. Go places.
100%.
Right, yeah, so it's like having an entourage. You make yourself, I mean, this has been said by someone else, so you make yourself the center of your own movie, you know, like you pay a load of people to follow you around filming you, and somehow that actually makes you famous by accident, you know, like you've created your own movie. But it's a lot of fun. I just met D-Rock last week in London. D-Rock was just here. I'm going to New York City in 2 weeks' time, and I'll be seeing him. But yeah, he was one of my early inspirations for like getting a team. You know, like you need an infrastructure. You need my first guy I hired, a guy called Callum. I call him my D-Rock. You need that person who's just, you know, willing to kind of follow you around and not hate you by the end of it. And it sounds like, David, you promoted that guy, because they can hang around 24/7 with you for 2 years. Then they deserve more.
Yeah,
for sure.
He was resistant. Yeah. He's glad he did.
Yeah, 100%. All right. We can kind of move on. They're very similar, right? You guys kind of hinted at community as well. But I know both of you have, I think content and community can go very hand in hand. They're definitely a little bit different for sure. But how are you guys thinking about, I mean, I know you're thinking about community as you're creating content, but how are you, what do you think makes up a community? How do you consistently grow and add value to your community? I think that's something that any community, there's always a lot of momentum at the beginning when new things are happening. And we've seen this with even, you know, platforms and different social apps and companies and brands and all sorts of things. How are you guys looking at building long-term community and brand that doesn't, I say, die down, right? We've seen a lot of companies, a lot of brands, they have, you know, massive success, and then 6-12 months, a couple years later, no one talks about them. They go out of business. The latest case being WeWork. I think they had one of the most powerful brands and communities in the world, and now they just filed bankruptcy, or they're going to be filing bankruptcy very soon. So I'm curious what, you know, whoever wants to start first, I think we can pass it back off to Simon. But how are you guys thinking about, you know, long-term brand community building that's sustainable?
Dave, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll just go quickly on this one. So for me, there's four ways to build a community: in person, on the phone, via email, and media. And to be very intentional about finding open-minded people and finding out and meeting where they're at and asking them what they like and what they don't like, and then getting to a transition statement which says, would it help you if blank? And when at the core of community of providing value, there's only two ways to provide people value. One, give them more of what they like, or take away some or all of what they don't like. If you're capable of doing that, they will be part of a community that will help each other and know people that can help each other. You got to, because the size, scope, and skill of the audience, run away from closed minds and address an open mind. What are you doing today pertaining to blank? What do you like? What don't you like? And you can provide value in person, on the phone, via email and media, and that community will grow and grow and grow with people that buy those ideas from you, sell your ideas for you.
Yeah, I completely agree with David. I would add, I mean, it's kind of maybe the same thing, but a different angle. I think people value a clear purpose for being there. You know, so in my case, for example, I ultimately, I want to empower people to do what they love, but I have a mantra which is kind of against the system. Partly, like in the system, we're told it's give and take. If you say it's give and take, everyone accepts that as normal, right? So I'll help you, you help me, it's give and take. I think that's wrong. So I stand for something. I believe it's give without take. That's actually how we're built. So I help David, but David might not be the right person to help me. So I don't help David with an expectation of David helping me back. I help David because I believe that he can help me. And then he then helps me because he can, and he goes on to be helped and help other people. In other words, I don't have expectation of him. Give without take. That philosophy is where I started, really. I'm like, I'm going to help you, this whoever's listening, for free. And all I ask is that you do the same for someone else. Right. So, but I don't have an expectation on you. If you don't do it, that's fine. But I guess what I'm saying is having a kind of a philosophy. And I think this is where WeWorks fell over, by the way. I mean, I feel like they had a raise the world's consciousness. It's a bit fluffy, but at least it was a central pillar for all the people being employed there, all the people joining up. It wasn't an office space. It was a movement. And then when Adam left, you know, in the movie, it's demonstrated, the VCs came in and they just kind of swept that aside and said, no, it's about selling office space. And I would argue that's probably why they're going bankrupt. You know, there was a loss of vision. And I think that it, when you build up a community and then the vision gets lost, the community dissipates. And so I think having a core philosophy, the reason people are there, has to be at the center of it. Otherwise, there's so many options for people. The community is not a new word. You know, there's so many other places that people can go. So if you don't have something that people believe to or are willing to listen to become a believer, then I think today community don't work. You need a central belief system. I think brands do this really well. Like Nike, for example, they stand for things. They have an opinion on things, even if it makes them unpopular. And I think that's the thing. You know, what does that brand stand for? And you just take out the word brand and put community in there instead, if you like. What does community stand for?
Yeah, I think the key component, Simon, too, is zero-sum game versus a value-add game. And so many people are in that zero-sum game of quid pro quo, transactional type of relationships, like VCs in the WeWork example, where those who build these communities and brands, like a Nike or like Apple, for example, they're really in the value-add game. And, you know, when we're adding value by helping someone or knowing someone that can help someone, This creates the exponentiality, the acceleration and aggregation of a community where you see big brands and big communities that are continually growing and will continually grow.
Love that. Yeah, I think I'm just seeing, like, I'm starting to think about it a lot more myself and just like understanding it on a much deeper level. And we had a talk, it was funny, like Friday, we were doing a live stream here, just like kind of randomly on Entra that I popped into. And yeah, a lot of people were like, I like that you guys, like meaning myself and our team, are like here on the platform talking to people.
Right. And they're like,
that is what brings a lot of people back, is like just interacting with other people. Right. I think a lot of people are just looking for other human interaction, you know, in any way that they can get that is like very deeply meaningful to them. And I think that will keep them coming back into communities, events, all sorts of different things. I want to, before we get into audience Q&A, we have about 10 minutes left. If you guys have questions, drop them in the room chat. I got one quick question first, that's kind of like a hot topic these days around AI. So I'm curious how you guys are using AI. Are you using it to help with content creation, ideas? Are you using it to automate any of your businesses? I'm just curious how you guys are using it, if you can share anything that might be helpful to people.
Samuel, go first.
Yeah, I'll jump in quickly. I mean, it's been said by someone else, I can't think who, but I think it's true. AI will not take your job. Those using AI will take your job. So I think it's important to lean into that and accept that things are going to change, but lean into leveraging the technology. I would also add, I mean, I've got a platform called helpbank.com. You know, we're helping people help people on there. And the AI is amazing. I mean, the answers that AI gives people when they have problems is better than me. And so it excites me when that's the case. And I think that, however, we have tried to use AI to do some LinkedIn posts and stuff, and I can always tell it's AI. I personally think it's to do with the prompts, better prompts, but I still can tell. And I look forward to the day that we can use these tools and you can get the same knowledge and it's quicker, more knowledge. But I still think AI has some limitations, but it won't last long. I'm sure they'll be fixed soon enough. I'm quite bullish on AI. I think it's a positive thing. But like anything, like the internet can be used for bad, the internet can be used for good. We need more good players in the system to make sure AI gets used for good.
Yeah.
I can build a house and it can destroy it. AI is a servant, not your master. And, you know, for me right now, because of the limitations, I'm looking how the limitations of AI serves me, not destroys or interferes with my objectives. And where it really serves people is from 0 to 1. It's not going to get you from 1 to 100, but luckily 0 to 1 takes more time than 1 to 100. So take, for example, writing a book. Because I actually have dummy accounts where I post all my content. The domain is so long that I don't even remember it. It has so many integers, but nobody can find it. And the reason is once I post all my content into these dummy accounts, I then can go ahead and ask AI, hey, write this 12-chapter book on don't do business with Dick. First chapter, surround yourself with the right people. Second chapter, surround yourself with the right ideas. Third chapter, surround yourself with the right frequency, and so on and so on, as if I was David Meltzer, speaker, author, entrepreneur. And because there's so much assimilated data on David Meltzer, it will write 0 to 1 my book and give me a head start of 6 months. Now I can make it my own. I can create my own stories and illusions and clean it up so that even Simon won't be able to know that I used AI to get from 0 to 1. But everyone else, if you don't do that, the same thing with my employees, right? Hey, rewrite this email as if I'm David Meltzer, legendary sports executive, or David Meltzer, content king, or whatever they want to do. But it'll rewrite my email in my voice, or even better, hey, rewrite this as if I'm Warren Buffett. And so 0 to 1, utilizing AI as a servant, we think the great statement Simon said is we need more good people that understand and utilize AI. So we use the hammer to build houses, not knock them down. And too many people right now, because of the hyper technological access and advancement, may not have the proper intentions. We need to build the masses with proper intentions to get proper results.
Yeah, no, I think that's spot on. I think it's a great tool for ideation. I think it's great to get that initial like writer's block, right? And or the initial stuff. I think right now there's so much content that I agree most of the time people can tell if it is AI and things like that, but it's still a fantastic tool for like getting to that point. It's great for summarizing things. I love it for that. I think that it's awesome. I think it's just getting started. I think most of the VC funding that I've been seeing over the last 6 to 12 months is going into AI. So companies are building, right? And I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon, but let's get into some, there's a couple audience questions that we have on the first being, how do you keep your community members active versus like passive? So a lot of people have followers, right? A lot of people have, you know, these big, a bunch of people watching their videos. How do you get people more engaged? How do you get people to actually, you know, be more active, like actually show up to events, actually leave comments, be more engaged as a community? Do you guys have any tips there and strategies?
I think none of people ask the community for help. They don't ask their community overall. I did some consulting for Home Depot for Arthur Blank on the checkout when they started selling appliances. They wanted to sell warranties. They have a garden checkout, they have a consumer checkout, a contractor checkout, and an automatic checkout. The automatic checkout sold more warranties 3 to 1 to the aggregate of the consumer, garden, and contractor checkout, because every time someone checked out, it asked them, regardless of how poor they looked, how angry they looked, how distracted they looked, how rich they, it just asked every time. And so I don't think people ask of their community enough, and therefore they don't watch enough, don't engage enough. The best way you can get to where you want to be is either ask someone for help, someone like Simon said earlier, that sits in a situation you want to be in. Hey, I want to interview people in the rain in London on the streets every day. I'm asking Simon. But you also can get to where you want to be by asking other people how to get them to where they want to be. So ask, to me, is the greatest way to build and engage a community.
Yeah, I love that, by the way. It's something I actually talk about a lot, because a lot of people, asking sometimes is also, for example, if you have a dream, telling people your dream, you know, by saying it out loud, you're indirectly asking people to get behind you. But people will tell me, I don't want to share it, someone might steal it. I'm saying, well, if you share it, like I've got a live going at the moment, there's 6,000 people listening in. If you share it, I promise you there'll be one person there who has the resources, the inclination, and the time to copy you. But they probably won't. But there's 5,999 people that right now, if you tell them what you're doing, might help you. You know, and I think that's it. You know, it's people just don't ask enough. And there's partly politeness, which I get. And, you know, I don't want to be spammed. You know, I like personalized messages. I like people to understand if I'm suitable to help them. So you want people to do their research. But I think asking is so underrated. And in the community, the other thing I'd say is that, you know, I've got a community of just over 100,000 people, and I've got their email address. So, you know, I can communicate with them with email and they will reply. If I write a personalized note, they will reply. If I do mass emailing, I get less response. So, you know, I think it is about the effort you make with your community too. And there are some people in my community that don't say anything at all. And then one day out of nowhere, they do something amazing. So, and that's fine. You know, I think it's also not, you know, not having ironically expectations on your community, but giving them every opportunity to be a part. So like I bring my community along for the journey. I've got them listening in now. Right. And, you know, not everybody wanted to go and sign up to Entree today, but I've still brought them along to listen. And eventually they'll hopefully sign up to Entree. Hopefully eventually they'll be a part of this sort of chat. But I just don't leave them behind. And I also go where the community want to talk. So I've got I built my own platform, as I mentioned earlier, helpbank.com. I go on Entree, I go on Instagram, I go on Facebook, I go on Telegram, I go on Discord. I've got a community in every single one of these places. So I don't just expect people to come to where I want them to be. And I think that's another thing. A lot of people, including me, but you build a platform, you want everyone to come to your platform. Well, some of your community won't. So I'm on Telegram because some of my community, that's where they want to chat. I'm on Discord because that's where some of my community are. And so I go where the community is. And I think that's the old way, is like, make everyone come to you. And I think the future is go, like, I went on TikTok because that's where my community is. So is TikTok my competition? No. You know, like, I see that as one more way of reaching my community.
For sure. I think I think it goes back to Dave's point too earlier about amplifying. I know you're a big proponent of that. I think it's something that, get your voice, get your message out there to as many places as you can. And, you know, one person on that random platform, you know, that you posted to, could end up being, you know, your biggest supporter that you would never have thought of. It's funny too, with in-person events, you just randomly see people all the time. There's two people this weekend that just came up to me and I never even met them before, but they've been following it for years. I know, Dave, you got to jump. So if there's any final words that you want to share, where should people, you know, follow your journey? I know you're active everywhere, but getting people signed up to your website, I know you do the free trainings on Fridays and everything. So what would you like to share to wrap up here?
I just like to share my email address. I do answer every email that I get, and I will be more than happy to sign a book, send it to you, pay for the book and shipping for anyone in our community. So david@dmeltzer.com. Like Simon, we have a ton of stuff for free. Just ask for it. david@dmeltzer.com. Google me if you forget it. So remember my name. Simon, I'll reach out to you. I'll see you next week in London. We'll figure that out. I'll give you a big hug. Super impressed. I love when I see someone that's even better in person than on the videos. And there's so much depth and knowledge that Simon has. Just a blessing to have him in our community, Michael. I will tell you that I'm someone that was there when Michael first started his first event. We, two or three people, whether New York or San Diego, and it's amazing how big a community can grow over time if you keep living in the value add world. Remember, everyone, be more interested than interesting. Be kind to your future self. Do good deeds. We'll see you both later. Thank you. See you.
Thanks
guys.
So much, Dave. Appreciate it. I'll loop you guys in your team's via email too, so you guys can link up while you're over there. All right. Have a great day, Dave. We dropped his email there in the room chat for everybody. Shoot him an email, sign up for his trainings and stuff. I have his book right behind me there as well. Connected to goodness. It's fantastic. Simon, I know you're super busy as well. So if you got a jump, feel free to share.
I'm happy to answer a few questions if you want in the chat, if there's anything else. I'm always happy to help while we're here together at this. We suddenly made it work timing wise.
Yeah, man, yeah. It was a long time coming. I'm glad it worked out. I hope you guys get a chance to meet in person. I think you guys, two powerhouses together, and similar philosophies too, just on helping people and providing value and all of that. The other question was, what was there a, so this is an interesting question. I'm curious your answer on this. So what was the, was there a moment when you realized that you were doing the right thing? Like, was there a moment that you realized everything was kind of clicking and you're like, I'm finally kind of on my right path? You know, whether that was your first company, whether that was more recently with HelpBank, whether that was when you figured out to just ask people what their dream is, like what, and you might have had multiple moments throughout your life, but I'm curious, like, what was that, I guess, aha moment, maybe once or twice or five times in your life when you kind of realize you're kind of on the right path versus other times when, yeah, there's a little bit more friction doing things and trying things.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I had different moments where, I mean, for example, I was 15 years old when I was kicked out of home, right? And so it was 3 weeks after my father died, my mother kicks me out of home and I'm homeless. And I think in a weird way, that was kind of an aha moment, right? Because you suddenly, you see the real world and you get exposure to how things actually work. The downside was I suddenly saw people taking drugs and people drinking themselves to sleep every night and like awful, you know, human scenes. But equally, on the other side, I got to see how the world works for real. And I also, at a young age, got exposed to this idea that if you have an idea, you can make it real. Yeah. And I think that, you know, I look back at that time, it's like weirdly with some sort of fond memory. So, you know, good luck and bad luck are still both luck. At that time, it was very bad luck. But I look back at that time and I'm grateful for that pain. I'm grateful for that difficult time. It woke me up. It gave me a head start in life, actually. And because I had no choice but to then, you know, to get out of that situation, I couldn't get a job because I didn't have a national insurance card. In England, you need a national insurance card to get a job. At 15, you can't get a job. I didn't have an address, so I couldn't get a job. So I had no choice, actually, but to start a business. And it sounds very glamorous. I started a business. I basically just walked past a big house that had a messy garden in Cambridge in England. And I thought, that doesn't seem right. They've got a nice big house. They must have money. Why is their garden messy? Maybe I can take care of their garden and make some money. And I just, you know, knocked on the door and said, hi, I'm Simon Squibb. I've got a gardening company. Total bullshit. And I said, is it possible, you know, I take care of your garden and you pay me to do that? And they were like, oh, that would actually be great. I haven't had time to find someone and I don't have time to take care of the garden at the moment. So that would be awesome. And that was it. You know, I suddenly had a gardening company, you know, and I think the, but I wouldn't have had that experience or that realization that it's so easy if I had stayed in the education system. Or for that matter, stayed, you know, at home. I think the whole needing it is so much more powerful than wanting it. And that's my takeaway. You can't just want something.
Yeah.
Everybody wants it. You've got to need it. And so that's for me, that was kind of probably one of the big aha moments. And then when I sold my company and, you know, basically I was on paper a millionaire from about 30, but I was actually a millionaire for real when I sold my company at 40. And I think that was another time, another realization for me. Like when I actually had the money in the bank, I thought that that was going to make me happy. That was it. I was sorted. I was never going to have a miserable day again because that's it. I don't have to worry about money anymore. And I was wrong. And I think that, you know, the old cliche line that you hear from stupid rich people is money doesn't make you happy. You're like, sure, right. Well, that's okay for you to say because you've got money. But it turns out it's true. So the second realization that I guess in my life, you know, was when I thought that I didn't have another thing to worry about ever. Turns out that that's the beginnings of a whole new set of problems. One, you've got to keep the money, which is, you know, might sound like a good problem to have, but money can own you if you're not careful, right? All these financial advisors coming at you and saying, buy houses and do this and do that. Suddenly you basically work for the money. You are literally working to keep the money. You know, it's no longer a business you're building that's fun to build, like I was doing prior to that. Suddenly I'm having to manage money. It's such a pain in the ass. And I know that's a bad complaint to have for a lot of people, like, well, fuck you, man, you know, like, good for you. But it's just I was used to. And the other thing was, like, my identity, like, I sold my company, I have no identity anymore. Like, I was the guy that was building a business. Mm. Now I'm just a guy. You meet someone, like, what's your name? Simon, what do you do? Oh, nothing. Well, okay. All right. See ya. You know, like, there's just, you can't start showing your bank balance and talking about how much money you've got. What, you know, no one cares. Right. So I think that my second realization was like, I've got to do, it's not about getting to retirement. You know, that's the big narrative we're sold that's a lie. That's what I realized. I realized that the narrative is, you know, is sold to people, get to retirement, right? 65, you'll be able to enjoy it all. Well, that's bollocks because actually you get to 65 and that happens, you're lost.
Yeah.
So I was lost at 40. So, you know, I'm so glad I retired early because I realized that retirement is the last thing I want. I have no plans to ever retire now, ever. Yeah. So the key is do what you love, and then you don't need to retire. Right? Retirement's for people that don't enjoy what they do.
Right. Exactly. I've always found it very, just the, like, the word and the concept very strange. I don't think I will ever retire. I've always thought of it as weird. It's like, what are you retiring from? What is your purpose after that point? Right. You know, some people they're very content just playing golf or sitting on the beach, chilling, whatever. But I don't think that you're at that point, you're almost just waiting to die. And I don't think that I have any desire to do that at all. I want to continue to build. I want to continue to leave a legacy. I want to continue to help people. I want to continue to do things that make a change. And it's similar to vacation. I don't like the word vacation. I think that that's weird. What are you taking a vacation from? Your life? That's weird, right? Like, why are you taking a vacation? Like, you're taking a vacation from a part of you that you don't like, right? In a lot of ways. So I've always, like, found that weird. I think, yes, you should have time to recharge and refresh and reassess, right? And relax. There's nothing wrong with relaxing a little bit from time to time and, like,
making sure you're not,
you know, you need to make sure that you're happy and healthy and all of that. But I think vacation is weird because it's you're trying to escape something that you know you have to go back to that you don't like. And I don't think that that is a good way of looking at situation. You know, I have always found it weird that, because I see my parents doing that. Like, every year, it's like they take a vacation. They're looking forward to retirement. And it's just like, I don't understand how that is, like, I don't know. And it's, they seem fine, but I personally can't get over that. So I've always like had, I've always had a different approach to it. And I think, getting back to your point earlier, I think for a lot of people, it's actually more beneficial for them to not have choices, right? You didn't have a choice when your mom kicked you out and you had to figure it out. It was either you did that or you became basically a street junkie, you know, or, you know, who knows what else, right? So you didn't have a choice. I think a lot of people now, if they grow up in a solid household and stuff, they have a lot of choices, and it, for them, there's so much comfort that they can never break out of the comfort.
Humans will divert to the easiest thing more often than not as well. So, right. You know, if a job that's easy, you know, living at home, if it's easy, people will just default to that easy life. And that makes you weak.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think. Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed it myself from time to time, too. It's like you get very, and I think that's one of the things with raising venture capital too. Like we didn't raise that much money, right? But I felt a level of relief when we did, and it was nice. Like I felt it was great because I felt a lot. I wasn't as stressed, right? But I think, for people who end up raising large amounts of money for an extended period of time, they don't have the same hunger or hustle, right, in them. And I think that's why a lot of these startups, especially like later stage startups, are starting to, you know, not do so well and shut down and stuff. I think now we're focused on building a real business. Like we're focused on really building things the right way. We've always kind of been lean and scrappy and, you know, done things different. But I've noticed that with, and people that I know too, and, you know, my founder friends and, you know, people who run startups and raise a lot of money, and then they get, you know, they just get very comfortable, right? And they don't really have the same drive that they did because, you know, they have, you know, their bank accounts full with, you know, a ton of money, and they don't need to, there's no real need or desire to really like work hard necessarily, as there was when there is, you know, when you have to, when you don't have any choices, right?
Yeah, I mean,
with that too.
Having money is a funny one, because I think, you know, I think money can give you choices. Yes. And that's a good thing. But I think money can also trap you. And I always love the Steve Jobs story about when he first made a lot of money at Apple. He basically, the first IPO, he made 50 million and it sat in his bank account. And he pretended he never received it. Mm. He went to work the next day, didn't go out and buy a car. He didn't do anything. He just went back to work. And I think there's something really powerful. He talked about another one of the founders of Apple who did take the money and bought a house, basically got into drugs and had a nightmare, basically. And I actually have lived a similar philosophy. Like, I pretend I've got no money sometimes. And I actually make sure that I'm building a business that's real and not something that's just being propped up by my money. And I think there's something really powerful in like, right, we've got no money. How are we going to make this work? And if you've got money, sometimes I've seen a lot of people, like you just said, raise a lot of money. WeWork's probably a good example. And then it fails. I would say WeWork's mistake is they raise too much money. You know, 4.4 billion for one person. Well, you know, just... You're not thinking about when you're signing those leases, you're not thinking about the long-term effect of the cost of that lease. You're not thinking, you're just spending 4.4 billion, you know, you're not. And well, if you don't have it, then you would be more careful on those leases and you would grow more carefully and they'd be in business today. They'd be doing all right. I think that it's too much money on the wrong business is a big, big problem. And time and time again, I've seen people start businesses with lots of money. I mean, this is hard for people to grasp because if you're talking about not having money, but I've seen it. And I know it should be true for myself. It's a competitive advantage to have no money when you start a business.
Yeah. No, it makes you think differently.
Totally.
And yeah, I mean, when I first started, you know, like I was literally, yeah, I mean, I started this with basically nothing. I literally went in to Bank of America with $1,000 and that was it. That was literally what I started Entre with. You know what I mean? And you know, I was paying for all the food and drinks at every event. We had no sponsors, you know what I mean? And I was, you know, doing all sorts of random stuff to, you know, figure things out. But yeah, it also gives me, like, it always gives me a sense of comfort because I can always know that, you know, when you start from nothing, then you're not afraid of nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'm the same. When I was homeless, I wasn't actually miserable. I was all right. You know, like, so when you realize, because I think a lot of people get trapped in the middle class. They have a home, for example, and they have a car. And they're scared to lose any of these things. So they don't take risks. They do a job they don't love. I'm generalizing, but the stats back me up. You know, a lot of people get trapped by that. And you think, oh, no, I don't want to lose my house. You know, and you make your house the most important thing in your life, as opposed to doing what you enjoy every day.
And I've
made money and I've lost money. I don't care. You know, like I will always try and do something fun and something that makes the world a better place. I will risk it all to do it. But I think having nothing to lose is quite powerful. I would say, you know, 4 years ago when I started what I'm doing now, there was a part of me is like, well, if I don't do anything, if I don't spend, you know, money building a platform, or I can live to 104 years old and never have to earn another dollar again. So maybe I should just do that, you know, just compound the money. And then as long as I don't live past 104 and I don't spend more than £25,000 a month, I'll be fine. But, you know, that's no way to live, though, is it? You know, like it kind of is kind of a cool thing. You could live that way. But to me, it's like, well, yeah, you know, you'll die at 104 if you're lucky. You'll probably die at 80 with money in the bank. Like, what's the point?
Yeah. The other thing, too, is like, what are you leaving behind?
Exactly. Legacy is quite important. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. Is there anything that you're like thinking about that you really want to leave behind?
I want to leave a philosophy behind. I want to change the philosophy of give and take and make it give without take. If that can stick, I think, you know, if everyone does a kind thing for a stranger today, you know, the world will be a better place by tomorrow. You know, like I've got 3.5 million followers across my social media platforms now. If they all do a kind thing for a stranger tomorrow, the world will change. You know, like 3.5 million people helped by a stranger. Those 3.5 million people that are helped will wake up as well, and then they'll help 3.5 million people. And the world will be a happier place by the end of next week. Fact. I think I'd like that as a legacy, you know, as a change of society belief, like don't say give and take anymore, say give without take. And then on top of that, I'd like to fix the education system.
And,
you know, that is my end goal. The education system has trapped people. It has not given people the options that it promised. The promise of education, in fact, I think it's like indoctrination. It works for a small percentage of society, those that are good at memorization and a certain type of intelligence. You get an A, you become a doctor, great. Yeah. But I think it doesn't work for 90% of the population. And in fact, I think it's detrimental to 90% of the population. Yeah. And I think education should be tailor-made. I think it should be personalized. I think it should allow people to feel free to do what they love. Not, I've got so much student debt, I have to get a job in a company I hate, and now houses are so expensive, I better get a job and get that mortgage now. I know that's what's happened. School teaches you to conform, sit down, shut up, don't copy, which is absolute bollocks. You know, like if a school teaches you not to copy, right? And if that was actually, people took that and learned that, oh, I better not copy, we wouldn't have fire today. You know, be like, well, that guy's got fire, don't copy him. Oh, all right then. So we're not allowed to copy fire. No. We're not allowed to evolve fire and maybe make a lighter or like some easier way.
Right.
No, don't copy. But like, what the hell are you talking about? Don't stand out. Wear the same school uniform. What a load of bollocks.
Most of the most successful people, companies, everything, they see something that is working and then duplicate it and try to make it better.
Yep.
That's how society works. Like that's how things progress. It's fascinating. I remember a teacher, like literally, I said, can I go to the bathroom? And she was like, she like literally wouldn't let me go to the bathroom because I didn't say, may I please go to the bathroom? I was like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. Like, the control. I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm just a fact person.
Right.
I follow the money actually to find out if something's true or not. It's very simple.
Yeah.
People are being manipulated to get money out of them. That's it. You know, it's not a group of people sitting in a room controlling the world. I don't believe that. I believe it's individuals making money out of you. You know, you only need to watch that documentary recently on the opioid.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, but you can see, you know, how it happens, right? It's just someone trying to make money out of a human being. If we make a drug that makes someone better, they don't come back. So what we actually need is a drug where it makes them come back, right? And it's not conspiracy theory, it's just follow the money. So people are being manipulated into like, well, I should buy a house. Well, you know, banks can't lend big money unless you do, right? And how owning houses was so good, they'd own them, wouldn't they? Now they will eventually, that's what monopoly was designed to. Monopoly was invented by a woman to show the problem of putting capitalism and a basic human necessity like accommodation together, right? I'm a capitalist by nature, but when you put those two things together, you have monopoly. And who wins in monopoly? One person. Will it be you? It will not be you. Even the buy-to-let people, even the people in property are slowly getting screwed, right? And certainly if you live in your house, you're definitely getting screwed. You know, like you, it's not an asset, it's a liability. Everyone knows an accounts term. Once you're financial literacy aware, owning a home you live in is technically a liability on their balance sheet. It's not an asset. So anyway, I mean, I go off on one now, sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. Yeah, I think I told you before too. Like my pinned tweet that I've had is let me see if I can pull it up here. It's here we go. The fact that kids are spending $100,000 and 4 years to learn entrepreneurship from professors that have never started a business is literally the biggest scam.
Have I retweeted that?
I don't know. It's literally from 2020. Because for me, the biggest thing, it's like literally like entrepreneurship now is one of the fastest growing majors in colleges, but they have professors teaching a class about starting a business that haven't started a business.
It's so stupid. It
blows my mind.
Yeah. And they're selling what's trendy, but they're not, it's not, I mean, most of the people I know that have done an MBA come out of an MBA shit scared of doing anything on their own.
Yeah.
It teaches them about all the failures, all the things that didn't work. They get
plus they have 40K in debt after their MBA. So it's
And often the MBAs are paid for by the company. So they're like, well, you've got to work for us for 3 years. It's just a way of making people feel like they've learned something. But what they're actually doing is installing more fear in people.
Right.
They're basically, you know, any business related, you know, university or college thing that I've seen is basically just piling on the fear to almost stop people going that way.
Right. And I don't know what your thoughts are on business plans and like writing out a real business plan and going through all of that. But I tell people a lot of times it's almost a waste of time, and you should start actually just trying to see if anyone wants it. Like just make it. Try it, build a wait list, try selling it, try talking to people. Because otherwise you're going to spend 2 to 3 months like trying to make this business plan that no one even cares about or wants it.
It's absolutely right. Yeah. Again, that's the number one thing they first teach you in a business school, by the way. Right. I've seen, you know, basically, first, let's write a business plan. I'm just like, it is just absolute bollocks. So I mean, there's loads of different ways to start a business. You know, of course, there are lots of different ways. And of course, if a business plan helps you, then great. Right. But I think a lot of the time, you just need your North Star, which is your value, and then you get there step by step, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm building a platform now. I bought a staircase in Twickenham. You know, like I bought a 5-story block. In the center of the city, and it was not on my business plan. Of course, there's no business plan that says buy a staircase, right. You know. Like, but it was the right thing to do at that moment with that opportunity that came into the ecosystem here in London. Right, it came up for sale. It was the first time a staircase had ever come for sale. I bought it, and it was not part of my plan when building what I'm building. You know, but you kind of sense that it's the right next thing to do. To get you where you want to be. And I think that's the thing that kind of gets trained out of people. You're not listening to your senses anymore. You know, you're almost listening, reading a bit of paper instead of like listening to the market and listening to the opportunity and moving on it.
Yeah. Awareness is what I like to describe that as. And if you look up the definition of awareness, the first synonym is living, being alive. So. Yeah. If you aren't aware, there was this theory. It's kind of like a little experiment. It's like if I asked you how many red cars you saw today, what would you say? Most people would say zero.
Yeah.
But if I said I'm going to pay you $1,000 for every red car you see today, you're going to be paying attention and looking for red cars. Mm. And it's the same thing for opportunities, right? If you're not looking for opportunities, right, you're not going to see them. So, and what I found is most successful, like most people that I've seen that are successful and, you know, or have like had,
like are doing
really well. They, you know, a lot of it's referred to as luck. A lot of it, it's referred to as just, you know, timing and all these things. But I think it's, they are aware, they're looking for opportunities. When opportunity comes, they take advantage of it, they act on it, they execute on it. And that's what separates a lot of people. It's wild to me how many people are oblivious to just little things, not even necessarily like big opportunities, but just like little opportunities that are right in front of their face.
You know, that's something that I'm
trying to get better at too. I'm trying to be better at seeing opportunities. I'm trying to get better at understanding opportunities and then acting on them too.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
All right. I know we're coming up on the hour here. I appreciate your time as always. This has been great. We haven't chatted for a little bit. I know we've been trying to go back and forth on WhatsApp, and it's been, you know, it's tough sometimes, but this is great. We got to catch up soon. Let me know. You said you're coming to New York, right?
Yeah, I'm in New York end of the month.
Okay, let me know those dates. We're gonna start doing a lot more events and stuff in New York. We have an event here.
Are you in New York now?
I'm in Austin right now, at home, but we have an event here tomorrow with Fidelity. We're going to be doing a lot more stuff with them, and then we'll be doing some stuff in New York too. So if you're there, let me know. I'll try to come up maybe, and maybe we can do a little happy hour or something. That'd be great to meet in person. I know we've been trying to for a while. But otherwise, let's try to catch up and go through some stuff. I know we have a lot of synergies with what we're doing, and you know, I'm glad to see that you've been crushing and doing well. I don't know if there's anything else that you want to share. We'll drop the links for HealthBank. We'll drop the links to your socials and stuff. But what's the best place for people to, you know, keep up with you and learn more about everything that you have going on?
Yeah, whatever platform you're on, I'm there at Simon Squibb. You'll find me. So anywhere that you you chat, I'll chat.
Okay. You are everywhere. What's your? I saw you got recently kicked off of Facebook or something. What was the deal with that?
My Facebook account got hacked.
Oh wow.
Okay. Yeah, and I had two-factor on there too. So that's quite scary. So I'm still trying to figure out what happened, but it seems that people can simulate your SIM card now. Wow. So there's some on Facebook, that account that got hacked, is a million followers on there. So quite scary. And I guess the hackers out there are getting more sophisticated. But anyway, I'm hopeful we'll get it back, or we'll just rebuild.
Yeah. It'll be okay. Yeah, and I'm sure that they'll work with you, because I know I think you'll be able to verify everything.
Hopefully. But they're a big company, and they're a bit slow.
Yeah, their support sucks.
It does.
Their support sucks. But we'll drop the link, helpbank.com, and then at Simon Squibb, right, on everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that.
Of course. Thank you. This nice is great.
Great way to catch up, actually. This is another way we could catch up more regularly. We're just doing here.
Yeah, for sure. I'll loop you, your team, with David's as well. I'll just throw you guys all on an email thread.
Brilliant. Yeah, thanks.
He'd be a good guy to connect with, if he's out in London. And I know he has some connections out there too, and people that maybe you know or don't know yet as well. But this was great, man. Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Stay tuned for the next one. We'll drop the full recording of this if you came in late, and if you're on another platform right now watching, we'll drop the full videos and everything out on YouTube, Spotify, everywhere. But Simon, thank you so much. This was great, man. Yeah, cheers.
See you, everybody. See you,
thanks for tuning in, guys.
Bye for now, everybody.
Have a great week. See you guys.